Om sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Om. Good. Welcome back. Welcome also to our many students attending these classes. What do they say? Virtually. Does it mean it's a virtual class? The attendance is virtual. It's a real class with some really wonderful teachings here of Sri Krishna. We saw in our last class that the next topic that came in the current chapter is bhakti. And Sri Krishna focuses on something very important here. Sometimes discussions on bhakti can go in many different directions. Here, he's choosing to focus on specific practices to cultivate bhakti. Bhakti does not come on its own. For some of you, you might think it comes on its own. If you were raised in a religious household, then you don't have to make any effort to cultivate that bhakti. Even that didn't come on its own. Your parents had to do something to cultivate it in you. My point is, bhakti, feelings of devotion and reverence, do not come. The expression many of you use is apne aap. It doesn't come on its own. Someone has to make effort. Your parents, for those of you raised in religious families, your parents had to make an effort. If you weren't raised in a religious family, then you need to make the effort. And it is specifically those practices that you can employ to cultivate that bhakti. That is what Sri Krishna is describing here. For those of you who already have bhakti, having grown up in religious households, these teachings then will help you cultivate your bhakti that much more strongly. So wherever you are, you can cultivate even more. And for others, in the end of the last class, we joked about remedial work. This will be a remedial course for some of you. So with that introduction, we can begin. And yes, okay. Mararte shvanga cheshta cha, mararte shvanga cheshta cha, vachasa madgunerinam, vachasa madgurerinam, mayarpanam cha manasaha. Mayarpanam cha manasaha sarva kama vivarjanam sarva kama vivarjanam. Some more suggestions, practices, and he gives three in quick succession here. You can read the translation, and you see the first line deals with limbs, physical, kayika. Second line deals with speech, vachika. Third line deals with manas, manasa. So these are the three modes in which we can commit action of any kind with our bodies, with our voices, with our minds, and using all three of these faculties, we can cultivate our devotion. How? In the first line, madarte shu, anga cheshta. We have to break the words apart. Anga cheshta, the activities of your body, of your limbs, should be mararte shu, should be directed towards me, should be for my sake. This is Sri Krishna speaking. So when he says your actions should be for my sake, you might be thinking in a very narrow sense of doing puja. So puja is the most common example. We make various offerings. We offer flowers. We offer incense. We offer prayer. We offer a lamp. So all of these are physical actions of offering. But as we've discussed before, when Sri Krishna speaks of himself, he doesn't only mean he as an individual avatara of Lord Vishnu, or even he as Ishvara himself. When Lord Krishna speaks about himself, he uses various reference points, one of which is, and we've seen many times, both in the Bhagavad Gita and in this Gita, where Sri Krishna refers to himself dwelling within you, as that inner divinity, as in Vedantic terminology, Satchidananda Atma. So when he says you should use your limbs in such a way that it is madartha for my sake, then it doesn't, that meaning doesn't get restricted to doing puja. Because to help a person in need, since Sri Krishna is inside that person, dwelling within that person, so to speak, then to help an individual person is a form of bhakti based on what Sri Krishna teaches here. But it's a form of bhakti only when you recognize that divinity within the other person. It doesn't mean, you know, if somebody falls, you don't have to think about it. Well, should I help the person? I'll be a little silly right now. Should I help the person or not? Well, Lord Krishna is inside this person. So for the sake of, even though I don't like this particular person, for the sake of Lord Krishna, I'll help them get up. I'm not suggesting anything silly like that at all. But rather, to recognize, as we all do, the sanctity of all life, not just human beings, animals, even plants and trees, to recognize the sanctity of all beings and to engage ourselves in activities to help all those beings. You don't have to think specifically, Lord Krishna is inside, but with this simple recognition of the innate divinity of all living beings, the sanctity of all living beings. So with that attitude, excuse me, we cultivate bhakti by using our bodies, also with our speech, vachasa mad guna iranam. Iranam means speaking. Speaking what? Mad guna, my qualities, vachasa, with your mouth. Speaking qualities, in Sanskrit we say stuti, hymns of praise. So those hymns of praise are a major form of prayer in our tradition. So to be reciting hymns of praise, by the way, not just alone at home. When we get together as a group and recite prayers, it is so much more powerful. There's a mutual reinforcement that takes place in when a community prays together. So don't think this is, again, don't think of it in a restricted sense. At home, maybe in front of your altar, saying your daily prayers, it extends to all forms of prayers, and even especially prayers done in a community setting. Very powerful. Not only helps you, helps others. And finally, Mayi arpanam cha manasaha. The arpanam, the offering, manasaha, of your mind, mayi, unto me. Now, what, you know, we use this language all the time, but what does it mean to offer your mind to Sri Krishna? You can offer flowers at an altar. How do you offer your mind? Well, this topic has actually come up a number of times in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. To offer your mind means to make your, to make everything you do in life conform to Sri Krishna's quote wishes. Notice, quote, wishes. Sri Krishna is not a human being that has human kinds of desires. But to conform to Sri Krishna's wishes simply means to follow dharma. If Sri Krishna were like a human being and had, well, Sri Krishna, of course, as an avatara, was like a human being. But suppose we understand Sri Krishna representing Ishvara in general, who definitely is not like a human being. But if Sri Krishna, well, actually, let's go back. I made a mistake. It's a good way. We can use a mistake for good benefit. You know, there's actually a teaching in some commentaries. They call it Samvadi Brahma. Brahma. It's a Brahma. It's an error that has a good consequence. I made an error right now, and you're going to see it has a good consequence. And the example they give is you're walking along the beach, and you see a shiny thing. And you think, oh, what a beautiful shell. You bend down to reach the shell, and you find it's silver jewelry that had been lost there, shining in the sun. So you made an error. The error has a good consequence. I just made an error. Let's use the error for a good consequence. And that is, Sri Krishna is Ishvara with a human form, which means Ishvara with human-like desires. And if you ask Sri Krishna, what should I do? Should I follow dharma or should I follow adharma? The answer is quite obvious. That's what it means to offer your mind to Sri Krishna, because all of your decisions on what you do in life, the decisions on whether you follow the path of dharma or adharma, or if you stray a little bit, you get back on that path, all of those decisions are made in your mind. So to offer your mind to Ishvara in general, or Sri Krishna in particular, means to follow dharma, to use your mind to follow dharma. Then, okay, and so to use your body, speech, and mind to cultivate bhakti. How else? Sarva kama vivarjanam. Another practice. To vivarjanam, the avoidance of sarva kama, of following, of pursuing all desires, and specifically worldly desires. In our meditation session, we hinted at this a little bit, of how we are often obsessed with worldly activities, gaining things that we really like and enjoy, decorating the home, decorating our bodies with nice clothing, whatever it is. We become obsessed with these activities because we enjoy them so much. And this is a place where our enjoyment can get us in trouble. There's nothing wrong with enjoying nice furniture in your home. Problem is when you get obsessed with it. Nothing wrong with enjoying nice clothing on your body, but the problem comes when we get obsessed with it. So here Sri Krishna is pointing to the fact that being obsessed with these worldly enjoyments prevents us from cultivating bhakti. We're too busy at the mall, too busy in a restaurant, wherever it might be. So we need to create some freedom in our lives for the sake of cultivating bhakti. Sri Krishna has much more to say about this in the next verse, so we'll just go ahead and see that. Marartirtha paritya go bhogasya cha sukhasya cha, bhogasya cha sukhasya ta, ishtam dattam hutam japta taptam ishtam dattam hutam japtam marartam yadvratam tapah marartam tadvratam yadvratam. Yes. So continuing on that same idea, mad arte, for my sake, artha parityagaha, artha, worldly objects, worldly enjoyments, parityagaha, giving up worldly enjoyments, mararte, which means not because you can't afford it when the inflation is high, sometimes. Oh, okay, I thought it went off again. So when inflation is up, sometimes we give up certain luxuries we enjoy. That's not obviously, that's not what Sri Krishna is talking about here. But rather, giving up worldly enjoyments, he says specifically in the second line, bhogasya, the renunciation of bhoga, enjoyment, and sukhasya, of worldly happiness, giving it up for my sake, for the sake of cultivating bhakti. Now, this is not, this can sound like a very typical dogmatic religious statement. When the religious preacher, notice I'm using the word preacher rather than teacher, because there's a huge, huge difference. The religious preacher will say, you should. The religious teacher will say, if you do this, here are the consequences. So the religious preacher will say, you should cultivate bhakti. You should give up worldly activities for the sake of cultivating bhakti. You should. You know, that there's a really kind of a nasty American joke about this. Don't should on me. So with that in mind. But that's what the preacher will say. The religious teacher probably won't use that word should. My own guru, I don't think he ever used it anytime I heard him teaching. Why? Because should is trying to convince you using some kind of authority to bully you into doing what they want you to. So the religious preacher uses this tactic of, and I don't mean to put down religious preachers. They do an important role. But from a perspective, isn't it true the preacher is doing religious bullying? We find it in every religion. I think it's a little less prevalent, not much less prevalent than the Hindu tradition. Other traditions are so much worse. In the Baptist Christian religion, there's a lot of focus on, if you commit sin, you are going to hell absolutely. Isn't that religious bullying? In a manner of speaking. So that's the problem with the preacher, the one whose favorite word is should, as opposed to the religious teacher. The religious teacher would say, do you know, if you spend all the time in the mall, in the restaurant, if you spend all the time chasing after these worldly pursuits, you know what you'll discover is that these are all temporary enjoyments. You enjoy something for a little bit, and then your contentment goes away. You enjoy some happiness, you eat some ice cream, you're happy, and then the ice cream is gone, and you're back to where you were before, feeling as miserable as ever. So the religious teacher will say, wouldn't it be better for you to consider going for a more permanent solution to this problem of always feeling miserable? If you want some happiness and peace and contentment that persists, you know you're not going to find it at the mall or in the restaurant, but you can find it through a process of spiritual growth. Notice how different those two approaches are. The approach of the preacher versus the approach of the teacher. Which approach is Sri Krishna using here? Is he saying, Uddhava, if you don't follow Dharma, you're going to hell? He doesn't say that. He's saying you should cultivate bhakti by giving up worldly desires. For what purpose? So far he's only said madarte, for my sake. In one or two more verses, we're going to get much more detail about what does it mean to do things for Sri Krishna's sake ends up being in your own best interests. We'll see how that's so in just a few minutes. So you can seek temporary little hits of happiness. By the way, the word hit is a word used in the drug world. You take a hit of some illicit drug to get high. What a word, and that word has come into American, common American parlance. You get a hit of enjoyment when you go to the mall. You get a hit of enjoyment when you go to the restaurant. So that suggests that it's unhealthy, obsessive behavior. Sri Krishna says, set it aside. It's an obstacle to your spiritual growth. And he concludes this, he concludes this list of practices. We saw four different practices in the prior verse. In last week's class, we saw other practices enumerated in several verses. And now we come to the end of the enumeration. And in these last two lines, he gives 6 more opportunities, 6 more forms of religious practice. In the final line, he says, madartam, to do practices for my sake. What kind of practices? Practices like, up in the third line, ishtam, worship, the kind of worship you might do at an altar. Dattam, acts of charity. What a wonderful way to cultivate bhakti. Well, interesting. Putting a check in an envelope, or nowadays entering your credit card information on some website for a charitable organization, that's an act of devotion. How wonderful is that? That's what he says. Dattam, acts of charity. Hutam, acts of ritual worship, specifically conducting a homa, oven, some ritual fire. Japtam, practicing japa, in japa in particular, meditation in general. In the last line, vratam, observing certain vows, penances like fasting. And finally, tapaha. Tapas also refers to practices like fasting. To do all of these for madartam. There's 6 more here. One or two in the first half of this verse, 4 in the previous verse, more in a verse before that, more in a verse before that. The point here is that Sri Krishna gives a wide range of practices that you can employ for the sake of cultivating devotion, bhakti, and that's something many of you might take for granted. If you were raised in the Hindu tradition, you say, of course, you can do it like this, you can do it like that, you can do it like that. You take it for granted. If had you been raised in another religious tradition, like I was, you wouldn't take it for granted, because in many other traditions, they say, this is what you have to do. Only do this. Don't do anything else. These are the practices that we sanction. There are sanctioned practices. Anything else is prohibited. That's how it's done in many other traditions. What I'm suggesting is not to allow ourselves to take this for granted. We've spoken many times about the principle of adhikari bheda, a principle that acknowledges the bheda, the difference among adhikaris, among individual spiritual practitioners. We are all different. One size doesn't fit all in the clothing store, and one size doesn't fit all when it comes to religion and spirituality. So we have here before us a tradition that embraces our uniqueness, and for the sake of addressing us as unique individuals, the tradition gives us so many different practices. Then the responsibility is ours to try different practices and find out which practices work best for us, which are we most attracted to, which practices are most effective for us. So that's a wonderful aspect of the tradition. We need not take that for granted. All right. Then he brings this topic to a close. Evam dharma manushyanam. Evam dharma manushyanam uddhavatmanivedinam uddhavatmanivedinam mai sanjayate bhaktihi mai sanjayate bhaktihi konyortosya vishishyate konyosya vishishyate. Evam, thus, dharmaihi. Dharma has many meanings. Here in this context, it's referring to all the practices we've just discussed. So dharma, dharmaihi, plural. Through these dharmas, through all of these religious practices, there's probably 20 or 30. More than 20 is just gone through in a very, very rapid fashion. Dharmaihi. By using all of these spiritual practices, in the second line, Uddhava, O Uddhava, by all of these practices, Manushyanam, for people, what kind of people? Atma Nivedinam. Atma Nivedana means offering unto Atma the true self. You're going to see something subtle here and in the next verse. So here, he's talking about... Actually, let's wait. I will wait on that for the next verse and take the simple meaning here. Atma nivedanam, for those who have offered... Here, atma can mean mind. Atma can mean almost anything, as dharma can have so many meanings. Offering oneself. So... O Uddhava, for all people, for people who have dedicated themselves, dharmaihi, by these religious practices, people who have dedicated themselves, mayi, in the third line, unto me. People who are doing all these religious practices to cultivate bhakti, he says, bhaktihi sanjayate, bhakti grows. Bhakti is cultivated. It's very, very obvious, very simple. Suppose you want to learn how to play tennis. How do you learn how to play tennis? There's only one. Only one. I mean, there are many things that can help. You know, having an instructor, watching tennis players, whatever it is, having a good racket, etc., etc. But the only way you're really going to learn to play tennis is to play tennis. And that of, you know, how to learn how to use a computer will fall exactly into the same category. How to practice bhakti, how to develop bhakti, by engaging in these devotional practices, you cultivate bhakti. It's like practicing tennis to become a great tennis player. Here, practicing devotional practices, for the sake of becoming a great bhakta. It's no mystery. There's nothing unusual here. But we have to do it. You can't just sit and contemplate on your tennis racket. It's not going to accomplish anything at all. Or reading books about tennis. All the tips and tricks from the experts. You read all of these books. It's like reading religious books. If you're only reading the books, what's the point? Or here, Uddhava Gita. If you're only reading this text, Sri Krishna says, here are 20-some practices for you to do, and say, okay, I got it, what's next? What's next is put these practices into practice. You have to do them. So, cultivating bhakti. Why? He made the point before that worldly pursuits, and you've heard this statement before, worldly pursuits can never culminate in perfect peace and contentment, whereas religious and spiritual efforts can indeed culminate in perfect peace and contentment. That's our most fundamental orientation. That's why we meet here every Saturday. And to conclude, Sri Krishna gives some praise and stuti. So he says, kaha anyaha artaha asya avashishyate. Asya, for a person. Kaha anyaha arta. What other, in here arta means goal. It has other meanings elsewhere. Kaha anyaha arta. What other goal avashishyate could remain asya for a person? What other goal could there be if what you truly want, well, truly want, that word truly. Tell me, do you want to be contentment and peaceful part of the time or all the time? It's not even a question. We all want unbroken contentment. We all want perfect peace. So then, why do we look for it at the mall or the restaurant where we know it's only going to be temporary? So it goes in halfway is the problem with so many of these teachings. You get it halfway. So here, bhakti leads you towards perfect peace and contentment. Going to the mall leads you towards a big credit card bill at the end of the month. How is that? Excuse me. Continuing. And we're going to see something very interesting now. Watch. Yadatman yadarpitam chittam, yadatman yadarpitam chittam, shantam satvopabrahmitam, shantam satvopabrahmitam, dharmam jnanam savairagyam, dharmam jnanam savairagyam, aishwaryam chabhipadyate, Aishwaryam chabipadyate. Yada, when atmani arpitam chittam. When your chitta, mind, is arpitam, offered. And here's the key word here. Atmani, unto atma. In the past series of verses, he kept saying, mayi, 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 unto me, unto me, unto me. And suddenly he's saying, Atmani, Atmani, Atmani. What's going on here? This is very deliberate. He is leading you through the use of this language to appreciate that when he says unto me, you should offer your mind unto me, he's not talking about the deity on the altar. He's not even talking about himself as an avatar of Lord Vishnu. He's not even talking about Lord Vishnu. Atma. When we say, when Sri Krishna says he dwells within you, that's a very colloquial way of saying your true nature as Satchidananda Atma is in fact Sri Krishna's presence within you. Notice we use, this is where devotional language meets spirituality. We have a confluence of two different things here. So far, we're using a lot of religious expressions, a lot of religious practices Sri Krishna has enumerated. But all those religious practices are for the sake of cultivating bhakti. And bhakti is to be cultivated because it's crucial for your spiritual growth. This is where religion and spirituality meet. The meeting point is bhakti, which is considered to be crucial for gaining moksha, for gaining enlightenment. It prepares you for gaining moksha. Without bhakti, you will never gain enlightenment. It's crucial preparation. So Sri Krishna here is shifting the language because he's shifting the topic. So far, he's talking about religious practices. Now he's going to talk about the religious practice in a larger arena, as it were, of spiritual growth. The ultimate purpose of our lives, if we can talk of an ultimate purpose, is spiritual growth, which culminates, as we said, in that unbroken contentment and perfect peace, only through this process of spiritual growth. So he switches language. He was saying, dedicate your mind, mayi, mayi, mayi. Dedicate it to me, to me, to me. And now suddenly, dedicate your mind, atmani, to your true self. So mayi, mayi, mayi becomes atmani, atmani, atmani. Here's a connection you may not have thought about. The most frequently quoted Mahavakya, there are several, but the most frequently quoted, of course, is Tat Tvam Asi, revealing the identity of Tat and Tvam. Who is Tvam? On a superficial level, the one sitting in your chair is Tvam. On a deeper level, Atma. Who is Tat? On a superficial level, everything that exists. On a deeper level, the divinity because of which everything exists. So that Mahavakya relates two things that seem so different. One is your inner divinity, and the other is the underlying reality because of which everything else exists. But now we have a little breakthrough because the divinity because of which you exist cannot be different from the divinity because of which everything else exists. There is but one divinity. Now we have a choice of language. We can say that divinity is Sri Krishna. We can say that divinity is Ishvara. We can say that divinity is Atma. These are words that point to the same truth. And the fact that Sri Krishna has switched here from mayi to atmani is evidence. This is a little bit of, it's like a hidden Mahavakya, where he uses mayi in a previous verse And he uses Atmani in this verse. Using Mayi in a previous verse is like Tat. Using Atmani in this verse is like Tvam. And having these two verses follow each other, dedicate your mind to me, dedicate your mind to the true self, that represents Asi. So here is a hidden Mahavakya. So, yada, when Atmani arpitam chittam, when your mind is dedicated to me, fixed on me, a mind that is shantam, peaceful, quiet, a mind that is sattva upabrimhitam, a mind that's full of sattva guna, a mind in which sattva guna is predominant. What about that person? Look at the end of the verse. For that person, abhipadyate. That person obtains. Obtains what? A fourfold attainment he gives here. So a person who has dedicated himself or herself to Sri Krishna / Atma. How is that? I knew a slash. I don't know what that means. A person who has dedicated himself to the inner divinity, which happens to be identical to Sri Krishna, for that person, abhipadyate, gains what? Four things. One, dharma. And here, dharma, as we saw in a previous verse, refers to all of these spiritual practices, the 20-plus practices he just gave. You become deeply engaged in those practices. You become successful in cultivating bhakti. Not only that, you gain jnanam. Earlier, we made the distinction between paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. Paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge, scriptural knowledge. And aparoksha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge, which really ends up being enlightenment. Here the reference is to the indirect knowledge. You understand these teachings of the scripture, which guide you on your path of spiritual growth. And that knowledge comes, savairagyam, comes along with dispassion. Sri Krishna used this exact expression several verses ago. So by dedicating yourself to cultivating bhakti, what do you get out of it? You get the dharmam, the practices which cultivate bhakti. You gain this jnanam, this spiritual instruction given by Sri Krishna to help you cultivate bhakti. Savairagyam, you gain dispassion towards worldly accomplishments, recognizing that those worldly accomplishments are temporary. This is on a different path, a path to something permanent. And the last you gain is Aishwaryam, greatness. What kind of greatness? We'll see in a couple of verses, two more verses. Sri Krishna himself will explain what that greatness is. This verse, we're back to our shoulds. The difference between a preacher and a teacher. Notice here, Sri Krishna is not saying you should focus your mind on me. He says, or focus your mind on Atma. He's saying the good consequence of being focused on spiritual growth, being focused on religious and spiritual practices, he says there's a benefit to you. Does somebody need to say, you should eat food? Huh? No one needs to tell you, because it's very clear that if the consequences of not eating food are very clear to you. You'll get hungry, and if you don't eat food, after several months, you'll be in bad shape. So the consequences of not eating food are clear, therefore it's unnecessary to tell you you should eat food. Here, Sri Krishna has just elaborately, and he's going to conclude these two verses, the verse we're seeing and the next verse, are talking about the consequences of these religious and spiritual practices. What are the good consequences? What are the good consequences of doing the 20-plus spiritual practices he's just described? He says the good consequences are dharma, jnanam, vairagyam, and aishwaryam are the good consequences. So he doesn't say you should. He doesn't need to say you should. Then in the very next verse, he's going to talk about the other side of the coin. And that is, what are the negative consequences of not performing all of these practices? So we'll see that. I think we'll end the class with that verse. It says, yararpitam tad vikalpe, yararpitam tad vikalpe, indriyai paridhavati, rajasvalam cha sannishtam, chittam viddhi viparyayam. Yad arpitam, and you have to go down to the fourth line and pick up that word chittam, mind. So yad is yada, when. When your chittam, when your mind is arpitam, is dedicated to, focused on, when your mind is focused on what? So first of all, he said mayi, on me. Then he said atmani, on my presence within you, your true self. Now he says that yada chittam arpitam, when your mind is focused on what? Tad vikalpe. Vikalpa is that which has created the world around us. When your mind is extrovert, when your mind is focused on what you can buy at the mall, when your mind is focused on what you can order at the fancy restaurant, when you're looking for happiness and contentment outside through these worldly pursuits, then what are the consequences? He says, indriyaihi paridhavati. Paridhavati, you will run, that person will run around indriyaihi due to the senses. Running around is perhaps too kind of a word. I would say being dragged around. There is a story in some scripture, I don't remember where somebody falls off his horse and is gets caught up in the harness, and the horse drags this poor fellow all over the place. The horse represents our senses. You should be on top of the horse, in control of the horse. You should be in control of your senses. If this fellow falls from the horse, he can't control the horse. He'll be dragged about. And notice that when you're on that horse, the horse is pretty, if you've ever ridden a horse, they're big, heavy, powerful animals. And I don't know, I found it actually a little frightening when they start going. You know, it's not my thing, I suppose. Good thing I'm not a cowboy. What a silly image. Okay. So, that horse is extremely powerful when you're in control. When you're not in control, when you're not in the saddle, nice American metaphor. When you're not in the saddle, when you're not in control, you're in trouble because that horse is going to be dragging you around. The horse, as we said, represents your senses. So when you are not in control of your senses, you're like that poor fellow being dragged through the dirt, caught up in the harness of that horse. It's a pretty grim image. I think it's an accurate image. We are dragged about by our senses. We've used the word many times, compulsion, when talking about raga and dvesha. That's our topic here. Think about it. What is it that compels good people to do such horrible things? And when I say good people, Sri Krishna dwells within everyone. And I'll avoid politics, but consider this. Sri Krishna dwells in the hearts of every single politician. And yet, look at this. They make a mess of everything, a mess of the world, causing wars, hunger, and all sorts of problems. Being dragged about by your senses. By the way, mind is considered a sense organ. In fact, it's considered number six. You have five senses that are outside into the world. You have one sense, antahkarana, which is focused internally. So being dragged around when what you want is power, when what you want is fame, when what you want is to use your governmental position to fill your bank account, talking about our politicians, this is the consequence of failing to control your own mind. Good people are dragged about and dragged into doing horrible things because they don't control the mind. Then, the person also becomes rajaswalam, just immersed in rajas here, passion, driven by their passions. This is not the time for a side issue, but this expression, it's so popular, follow your heart. Whenever I hear that, I think, depends. Depends on how you interpret that. Because if what you mean by follow your heart is just do whatever you want, God save us. Dragged about. And not only do the person being dragged about suffer, we also suffer. When that person becomes a politician, we suffer. What is the problem? Rajaswalam, driven by passions, cha and asat nishtam. Breaking the words apart, there's an a prefix. The word sat, asat, here means not good, impure. Asat nishtam. The person becomes established in impure deeds, undesirable deeds, deeds that are harmful to oneself and others. So Sri Krishna concludes by addressing Uddhava, saying vidhi, understand this, O Uddhava, vidhi, understand that such a chittam, such a mind is viparyayam, opposed. And opposed specifically to those four things he mentioned in the prior verse, dharma, jnana, dharma, religious practice, jnana, scriptural learning, vairagya, dispassion, aishwaryam, greatness. These four will never be obtained if you fail to engage yourself as Sri Krishna has told you to. So Sri Krishna here is making it so easy for us. All you have to do is this, that, and the other thing. Usually when somebody says, all you have to do, it's usually, all you have to do is usually this. It's not this. Like, you're having a... You've had a bitter fight with someone that's gone on for decades. And your friend pats you on the shoulder. All you have to do is forgive them. Not so easy. The point I'm making here is that the term, all you have to do, is usually misleading. Here, it's not misleading. Sri Krishna has given you this whole, like a menu of different practices that you can engage in for the sake of cultivating bhakti that will put you on the path, a path to spiritual growth, a path that culminates in finding perfect peace and contentment. It really is all you have to do. All you have to do is listen with an open mind to Sri Krishna's advice. Your friend who says all you have to do is forgive them, maybe that's not the right advice. This is definitely the right advice we're given here. We'll stop at this point and we'll continue in the next class. Quick announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we'll have our Upadesha Sahasri Vedanta class at 10 o'clock, followed by Satsang at 11 o'clock. Next Saturday is Ganesha Chaturthi. And what we'll do, again, we'll do something simple like we did for Krishna Janmashtami, and that is during the meditation session, we'll begin with Ganapati Puja, and then we'll segue into meditation. So instead of a big, complicated celebration, we'll do it in a very simple but meaningful, heartfelt way. We'll conclude with our prayers. Om Ganana Hantva Ganapati Gamhavamahe Kavingavina Mupamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrinvan Utibhisvira Sarinam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah Sarve Santu Niramayah Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritangamaya om shanti 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 om tat sat.